Alan Crane Productions, in association with the Emergent Life Studio, present the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, for autumn semester 2025. Allow me to introduce myself. I am Professor Alan Kring of the Department of Finance, Insurance, and Law. This is FIL 240, Section 1, for autumn semester 2025. Good Lord. I will be going through some of the details of the course for a few minutes, and then I'm going to turn it over to our Cengage representative so he can walk you through the process of getting your resources, online resources for the course. But first things first is that the course is somewhat robust, and I will be teaching you at a fairly heavy pace. There are two parts to the course. There's the course textbook, the e-text by Cengage Unlimited, and then there are my lectures. There will be times in this course when I give you a lot of information that is not in the textbook. The quizzes, midterm exam, and final exam are based upon my lectures. The homework content is, the homework problems are based exclusively on the e-text. So you're getting two loads of information for the price of one. A few cautions for you. I'm a loud, aggressive teacher. I have been doing this for 45 years, as well as consulting and running businesses of my own. And I will bring my practical knowledge to bear in this classroom every day. My company I've been running for the last 13 years is Emergent Light Studio as a corporation. It was a sole proprietorship before that. And I do sales, I run art exhibits, and do shows, and I do online sales through e-commerce, several e-commerce solutions, including Amazon, and also other platforms. Now, my background is I'm a specialist in investments, corporate finance, and also in artificial intelligence systems. We will talk a lot about that in this class, and we will talk about such matters as attendance and cheating, especially with ChatGPTs, which have become very popular as a modality for getting answers that are usually wrong for a class like this. And we'll talk a lot about this. And after the talk by Mr. Olson over here, we'll get down to the business of it. But a few quick highlights. As far as the syllabus goes, I anticipate that you'll be here every day. The attendance is taken by Attendance Radar. You should have gotten an email message that gives you the link to the app, and you will log in. Simply log in when I say it's time, and you will get a Bluetooth signal will come to you, and it will geolocate on your Bluetooth signal, and it'll say, yes, you're here. That's how attendance will work. Now, if it doesn't work for some reason, you need to come up at that class, not later, not in an email, and say, somehow I could not log in the attendance by the Bluetooth. Now, that has a shortened range of about this classroom, so there are sometimes students who walk by the building and try to lock into it and all that. Probably won't work. So you have to be in the classroom. Attendance is a big problem, and in my classes, it's been pretty much resolved through these methods. There are other parts of this course that I want to talk to you about, moving parts as far as how you do the work in my class. I don't have you use pencil and paper or financial calculators. All of your problems that I would give you as far as quiz, test, midterm, final exam, those are done in Excel. And I create templates for you to use so that you are very comfortable with Excel, because it is the platform of choice for quantitative analytics in the corporate business, in the corporate world. That's why I will require that you do a certification. You can do it through one of the heavies out there that I've got arrangements with, Udemy and Wall Street Prep. Those cost some money, But if you set up your LinkedIn account so that it is connected to your ISU account, LinkedIn Learning is free to you. And I will take that as one of the credits for this course. But let me think if there's anything else I want to do. Notice, by the way, that I am podcasting. I have podcasted my lectures since the early 2000s. I was one of the first education podcasters on Apple iTunes, and I'm still there after all these years. And I'll show you how to get to my podcasting site or to Apple iTunes, whichever one you want to do, so that you don't miss a lecture. If you are absent, you can actually listen to the lecture on podcast, and I'll go through that after Chris has had his say. And as a matter of fact, why don't I do that right now? I'm going to let you take over. And as I had told you, I podcast all of my lectures, and I will show you where my main website is. This is not Canvas. These are my own private websites that do these kinds of things that keeps the university from claiming intellectual property rights over what I teach. ISU-PROF.com. Now that is my core podcasting site. And as you can see, well, this is last semester's, I haven't got a podcast for this one. But as you can see, every lecture for every section is recorded. And if you click there on that link, it will open up in your native MP3 player. If you're on Windows, it's probably Media something or other. And then on Apple, it's probably QuickTime. But then you can hear the lecture anytime you want, day or night. You can listen to this lecture when you're eating, when you're sleeping, when you're lonely, when you're enjoying the company of another. But you can listen to these at any time. Now, if you don't want to be on my creepy-ass website, you can always go over to Apple iTunes. You just click on that link. And as you can see, these are from last spring. You can run them through that, and you'll copy the link back from here if you want to capture and bookmark this podcasting site here. Like I said, I was one of the first education podcasters that Apple embraced many years ago. Surprisingly, I'm still on there. They are set up to be professionally produced and all that kind of stuff. So they listen, so they're a good listen. And of course, they're not the same as being in the class because you can't see what I write on the board at all, any graphics or things like that. But it's there for you as a backup. And you can also listen to it just because you really enjoyed my lecture and you want to live that dream again or something like that. Okay, now let me get back to my own site here. This is primarily, now one thing, assignments, you get them in there, and there's a scrolling marquee if there's anything important. Like if I die, it'll be there, and I'll tell you when I'll be back to start the classes again. And then if this isn't enough for you, you can also listen to, this is years and years of entire courses in finance and in a few other subjects here that you can just click on one, listen to the lecture. Maybe my lecture you didn't quite think it was good on bonds this time. You can go back to a previous semester and find the lecture on bonds in that semester. So these are all there for you to listen to as well. But generally speaking, this is a good backup for you. It'll help you out with following up on material. I pour information at you, and you're taking notes. You're probably going to miss information. And if you go back through and listen to the podcast, you'll be surprised at how many blanks, how many holes you have in your notes. Certainly for the first 2, 3, 4 weeks, you won't be keeping speed with me, and I know that'll happen. This will help you build your note base more than just trying to see if you can remember things that I said that aren't in your notes. Anyway, now a couple of other things that I need to bring up with you. And of course, I didn't get to the, I'll get to the syllabus here in just a minute. As I said, we are using Attendance Radar. You should have gotten an email message from Codify that takes you to the app. And what happens in that app is if you click on that link, it will directly put you into my courses and you'll be able to register. You go through this thing, you click on the app, it downloads, and then you register. Use your ISU email address for your registration. And the same name that's in Canvas for you in the university records. And then it'll peg you right away. Now what I'm going to do at this point is I'm going to fire that app up, and all it does is call a Bluetooth for you. Day one. I'm going to send out the Bluetooth signal, and you should be able to walk into your app. It's got 15 minutes. You should be able to walk into it, and you'll be able to register your attendance. Now, again, make sure that if something goes sideways, you tell me after class. My teaching assistant will be in here in a while, and she should be here with me. Don't email us afterwards or say it, well, last week I was in class and it's not there. You won't get any credit for it. I guarantee you, you've got to be here live. Hello. 43 already. Just rocking it on. Now, the clock I've set is 15 minutes. You have 15 minutes from when I say go to get it locked in, so it's not a panic situation. Okay, while you're getting yourself squared away, wow. It's actually one of the things I like about this one is that it's not a tracker, it's not a geolocator, it's just a Bluetooth signal. That means it's not chasing you around, following you. But do turn it off anyway, just in case. But those ones that are just like geolocators, like there was one called Archive. Did any of you have a class with Archive or Archive, some people pronounce? It was a very popular one. It was a geolocator, and it followed you everywhere. They knew even when you were on the toilet. It was that bad. One thing, if you haven't done it already, you need to download Respondus. It's a lockdown browser, and in the overview, you can see for Windows, you click here to download it. For Mac, you click here. Respondus is touchy with Macs. I'm going to put up a practice quiz for the weekend for you. It's a Respondus browser quiz so that you can find out if your Respondus is actually working before you actually have a live fire quiz. So do take that quiz because there is a bonus point if you take it, just so you can know that your lockdown browser is working. And the reason I'm doing this is simple because I can show you pictures of students who are using ChatGPTs and Google searches to do quizzes and exams. It was an absolute catastrophe. Last spring, I had a group of students who were using ChatGPTs. We were circling the room, watching for them, but there was a group that was sitting up against the back wall, and of course, we couldn't see that they were using ChatGPTs. One finished the final exam in 16 minutes. Yeah. Funniest thing was he got a 72% because I put chat traps in there. Things I know ChatGPTs will get wrong. As I said, I'm IBM certified in artificial intelligence, and ChatGPTs, as I said, are the hillbillies of artificial intelligence. They're dumb AF. They're easy to fool, and I fool them all the time. So don't try to use a chat, but I'm still, the Respondus keeps you from prowling around. Now, one problem with the Respondus is that if it will lock out anything else you're doing. So I let you use your notes on quizzes. You can use all your notes. The problem is that if your notes are on the computer, you can't get to them from the lockdown. So if you're using a computer to take notes, make sure that you print them out or write them on paper or something like that for the quizzes. So, right. So do be careful about that. Now, Let me get away from some of this happiness for a while. First of all, as I told you, my name is Professor Alan Kring. Call me Professor Kring or Professor C. My teaching assistant is Ms. Meredith Springer. That's Ms. Springer. She's just very helpful, especially she is outstanding in Excel. She probably is better than I am. She can do pivot tables while I'm trying to figure out how to turn on Excel. So if you have, especially during our office hours, if you got an Excel problem, she's the go-to person for that. Otherwise, just come in. Sit down if you don't want to talk about anything but your finance as a possible career, which I recommend, or not. I just want to ask a few quick questions or anything like that. Come in during my office hours, and I'll fill you in on it. As I said, I've been teaching for 45 years. I'm a part of the Faculty of Finance. I also am an international teacher. I just got back a few weeks ago from teaching for the university in Central America. We also have programs that I am involved in Africa. It used to be West Africa, and now it's most of the northern part and central part of Africa. We're also working with second world countries in the Caribbean with their ministries of finance and economic development and resource development and all of that. And they were sending delegations here, as well as us going over there, and now we're having a little problem with getting their diplomats. They have diplomatic passports, but we're having a few problems with getting those people in here now. I don't know why. Yes, I do know why, but anyway. Now, on other subjects related to this, I do bring a lot of my own consulting work. I used to be a consultant for years, I was. When I finished my coursework, college work at Ohio State, and I taught there for 9 years, I ran my own DJ service. I was a stand-up comedian. I was also involved in other kinds of activities. I ran a penny brokerage house, penny stock house. And every day at the beginning of the day, except for today, the first thing I'm going to do is say, let's look at the numbers. And I'm going to teach you how to read stocks and bond screens, how to look at investments, so that you don't have to listen to others who are telling you what to do. You'll know how to read them yourself. We do about 15 minutes of that, 10, 15 minutes every day, looking at broad markets around the world and in the United States. We look at specific stocks and bonds and other types of investment instruments, and I teach you what they are and how you look at the numbers for yourself so that you are empowered to make your own decisions instead of listening to talking heads on TV. The truth of the matter is that most of those people who give you stock advice, like Cramer and all of those, they are absolutely not good investment advisors. If they were good at what they did, they wouldn't be on TV. They'd be having drinks off the coast of Cabo San Luca and laughing at all the other people. And now, when I talk to you about business, I am very hardcore, very harsh. That doesn't mean I'm some extreme conservative. I'm moderately conservative, but I tell you how it is in the business world. So get used to my style. I'm very harsh. I'm very loud sometimes. And there will be times when the book and I disagree. Madam, the book and I disagree, who's right? You are an intellectual colossus. Yes. I know what I'm doing, but don't ever take investment advice from me. If I were that good at picking stocks, would I be here? No, I still would be because I love you. No, I don't. A little too much Jack in there today. Okay. Oh, shut up. Anyway, I want you to read the syllabus, take it seriously, reading through it. No, I don't put any hidden gems in there for you to find a treasure or anything like that. But if you do something that is contrary to the syllabus, I'm going to eat you alive for doing that, for asking for something. Like, I don't take, you have to have, if you're going to be absent, you're going to be absent. The excused absences are listed in the syllabus, military obligations, a medical disaster on your part, those kinds of things. Other than that, you get 5 absences free in your attendance. You can miss 2 quizzes. I drop your 2 lowest quizzes. I drop your 3 lowest homeworks. And to balance that, I cream you on the midterm of the quizzes and the midterm and the final. They're difficult. I encourage you to study. Take it seriously what I'm doing in here. This is a very brutal world that I work in. I'm out there. I have many students who are out there practicing finance, traders, brokers, IBs, that's investment bankers, investment advisors. We talk every night. I have my computers, giant screens running 24/7, watching markets around the world. This is a rough business, and it is not pleasant at all. And I'm going to go through some of the concepts of what it means to be in a capitalist economy like ours. It is a harsh and gruesome world. But the first thing that we go through, and if you have other questions, by all means, send me an email message if you have something that is unclear to you about this. But for the moment, let me start this lecture, and this will be my style every time. As I challenge you, I walk around this place, and I'll ask anyone trying to hide in a center question, but I'll start with picking on these poor people who are in the front, because I say you're poor people because I tend to salivate when I talk. So you might want to hold that. Madam, what is business?
Trying to get some money by doing services for other people.
You know what? That's actually not bad. It's very informal, but trying to get some money. Well, actually, there are a couple of things in that, but I won't nitpick now. But let's be more specific. Can you, madam, be more specific? What is business?
A transaction.
Well, I transact with my cats. That's not business, you know.
Like a deal between people, you make an agreement.
That's part of it, yeah. Let me give you a loose definition, just to get us started here, is that business is using inputs in an organized manner to create output. That is sellable or givable. In your words, transactable. You see, in business, you can run a business on your own. You don't need a corporation to run a business. Most of the businesses that I have created in my life started as just a one-man show, what we call a sole proprietorship. And there's a variation on that called a partnership, which is more than one person. Now, a highly formalized, structured part of that is corporations. I'll go through that more formally in this and the next lecture. But essentially, most of you have done something that was a business. You did it as a sole proprietor. You might not have even thought of it as a business. You might have decided that you were going to run a lemonade stand, sir. That's a business. You decided that you had a business where you walked dogs and cats. Well, you don't walk cats, you drag cats. But that was a business. You took inputs, human labor, and a leash and maybe some pooper scooper and all that, and you applied it to a dog or a cat, and you did that to create an output. And that output was a service. Give the dog or cat some time outside. Can get much, much more complicated. It can get insanely complicated. But at the heart of it, you're taking inputs for the purpose of creating an output. Whether or not you make money at it depends a lot on marketing and luck and all those kinds of things. But that's all there is to it. But let's get down to the part where we talk about different kinds of economies. There is a kind of economy called a command economy. The best examples of those would be communist economies, where what is produced, how to produce it, and for whom to produce it are all told to you from some central authority. What to produce, how to produce it, and for whom to produce it. Now, in a market economy, it's the opposite. What to produce? Well, what sells? How to produce it? Cheap, as efficiently as possible. And for whom? For whoever can pay for it. That's market. You're driven by your own internal decision-making process. Now, there are a number of mixed economies which lean more toward one or the other. There are some aspects of the U.S. economy that are command. Thou shalt do this. You will make this for these people. You will make it with these components. And you will, all that kind of stuff. So you get that kind of mix. And like I said, it's kind of a balance. You get some interesting twists where you have almost like binary economies, where at one level there is this utterly powerful group of families that run the overlying economy, but then on the underlying side of it, there is a lot of entrepreneurial effort being made. China is kind of like that. A classic example is Sweden, which at its top tier level is an economic system called fascism. Now, I'm not saying that in any, Hitler kind of way. Fascism is a marriage of government and industry. So at the top level, it's quite fascist. But at the bottom level, it's purely socialist. It's an amazing, and it works, oddly enough. And there are other different types of binaries. But anyway, getting away from that, we are very much a capitalist system. And there are good reasons for that. We may be a kind of distorted capitalist system at this point. It's matured so much that it's kind of got some weird aspects to it. But let me try this. You, sir, are a bread maker. You make bread. That's what you do in your village. You aren't particularly good at it, but you're the only one in town who does it. You take resources like flour and you kind of, and if some falls on the floor, you're not very, and you hire your lazy ass brother here, and all he does is sit in the basement and eat Cheetos and play World of Warcraft. Really? Geezer's game? World of Warcraft? But the thing, though, is you're the only game in town, so you can just pass those costs along to your customers, and what are they going to do? They're going to bitch about it, but they're still going to buy your bread. Now, you, madam, have you ever seen someone who doesn't deserve the money that he has? Kanye comes to mind. So you look at him and you say, well, I could just be careful with my resources. I wouldn't waste bread, flour. I wouldn't hire useless people like you. Now, this is, and then you can charge a lower price. This is called a static efficiency. Static efficiency. Using your existing resources more efficiently. That's all it is. So there is a natural drive in our economy to minimize the resources that we use in production. That's why when you get into business and you will be managers, you will bitch at your lower employees. Why weren't you at your desk? Are you really in need of that many pencils? Do we really need to upgrade our computer systems? We just did it 2 years ago. That's static efficiency. We're just using the existing resource base, the factors of production, more efficiently. But then, you, madam, you come along and you look at her and you say, why, she doesn't deserve that. And you start thinking, wait a minute, I could use a different technology. Now, people these days, they hear technology and they think of computers. Technology in your home, technology in your car, technology in your ass. No, technology is merely the factors of production and how you arrange them. Do you use more of this, less of that? You think I could make mechanical lines to assemble the ingredients, put them into the pot, then scoop it out and make bread? I don't have to hire as many people. I'm shifting toward machinery and away from people. That is a technology. The same thing has been done ever since humans came to be. The clovey points, those arrowheads, they were just chop, chop, and oh, this will kill, bah. And then they started saying, we flake them, use this one factor of production called flint, and we can flake it and make it sharp as all get out. And that will work better. We can kill more efficiently. We don't have to run up and try to punch a mastodon. We can stab it in the side and then take his trunk and toss us around. Okay, so you are shifting technologies. That is called dynamic efficiency. Dynamic efficiency is changing the technology that you are using. This marker sucks. Dynamic efficiency. And you can sell at a lower price because you've got an efficiency, you've lowered your costs. Now let's go back through this. Not one of you entrepreneurs did this you didn't make bread because you love people. No, you did it because you want to take their money. That's all you did. Well, the Lord told me to do this bread making. No, he didn't. That was just him faking you out. Ha ha, you're working your ass off. I didn't mean for you to do that. You just did that on your own. And you did the same thing. You took away his business. Not because you love his customers and you wanted them to cuddle with you. No, you wanted their money and you were willing to drive him into bankruptcy to do it. Same with you, woman. You did not have anything to do with it. We say in our business, all businesses, well, we do this because we love our customers. Oh, like hell you do. That's marketing. And we have to do it to make people feel good about buying stuff, oftentimes things they don't want. You understand, you went into business. Well, you went into business to take away from him, to drive him into bankruptcy by static efficiency. You went into business to drive her into bankruptcy through dynamic efficiency. There is nothing about sentiment in our world. We don't care. Unless it's, sells more of our product than we say we do. That's the whole point of this, is you are driving her out of business, putting her into bankruptcy, driving him out of business to put him into bankruptcy so their kids have to go to a community college instead of Illinois State University. That's all there is. Now, there's a problem here. There's a problem. What happens? You've destroyed them. You run the operation. You got the bread market. Cheap bread. What happens if your bread tastes like ass? Yes, it does. You got it right up there on the side. Kids, mom brings a kid in. No, mommy, I don't want that bread. That bread tastes like ass. Oh, shut up. There's kids starving in China. They'd love to have an ass sandwich about now. That's right. You see, there is a stop on this greed. You can't make the product so bad that she can come slipping back in. Yes, ours is a little higher price, but you won't have butt breath. But underlying this is an important principle that violates what we think in terms of, morals and ethics and religious convictions. What I'm telling you is that greed is good. Greed works. Greed drives us to efficiency. We want, so we take, but we can't take unless we've got something to offer. That is what capitalism is at its core. It is a system driven by enlightened self-interest, as the first economist Samuel Adams said. You see, enlightened self-interest, we are out there to get our own. We're out there to do this for ourselves. But through that greed, we create efficiency that is like none other. No other economic system creates efficiency like this does. Because in the system, efficiency is everything. That's how we bring down the costs. And then marketing is the other side of it. The placement of the products, the price points, and the distribution lines and all that. You see, we are driven by self-interest. We want more of everything. More of life, more of health, more of food, more of sex, more of just everything. There's nothing wrong with that in our world. Because if we go too far, we can get stopped. The problem is what happens if we can't be stopped. And that's where there is a place for government regulation, where the unbridled greed can drive us to caustic solutions that harm people. And so there is a balance that has to be found there. The idea that the best government is no government and all of that, bullshit, we've tried that. 1920s, what did it lead to? The crash of 29 and a depression that was ungodly in its scope and depth. So we don't let it go too far. And when it does, well, we pay the price, as we are about to in the next couple of years. Within a couple of quarters, we will be in a very bad recession. And so we'll talk about that as time goes on in here. Okay, let me kill this off while I get myself ready for my next rant here. The truth of the matter is that in what I tell you in this course, finance is driven by this wildness of hunger, of traders, buyers and sellers of stock, companies trying to raise capital, trying to raise money. And it is a system that is cold and soulless. It does not care about winners and losers. It is a macro system that no individual should be able to control, although some do have more control than we like to admit. But in that process, I'm going to teach you about stocks and bonds. I'm going to show you screens, and you'll see minute to minute the price is just bobbling, just like a random walk, because they are a random walk. This is the push and shove of the markets as the bears and bulls fight against each other second by second across the world to the tune of, in the global economy in a given day, quadrillions of dollars are swirling above. That's what I'm going to teach you about. What most people, perhaps 99, 99.5% of the people of this world, and especially in this country, have no idea what's happening behind the curtain. They can live in their lives of watching TV and enjoying their booze and their music and all of that. We are the ones who are the stewards. We are the educated. We let them have their conspiracy theories. We let them have their tricks and ideas about how stocks work or how this or that is controlling the economy. You are the ones who have to take care of them. We give them their bread and their circuses. We tolerate their nonsense. But we are the ones who have to be their masters. We don't make a big thing of it. The ones who do are idiots. They're probably not the real ones. We are the technocrats, the mechanics. We know how the system works on the bottom level. What's driving all that they see around them. So that when they hear thunder, they can say, well, that's the sky god. When we hear thunder, we know exactly the physics and the physical dynamics that are going on in the electromagnetic spectrum when that happens. So you keep that in mind, that I am treating you as if you are going to be the masters of this world, unless you are off by the AIs, and we're going to talk a lot about that in this course. But I've had enough of you for today. I'm so over you. Get out of here.